Welcome back. It's the Coaches Rising podcast. Today, I'm joined by Marcella Cox, who's actually a therapist. She's dedicated her career to treating eating disorders, working with body shame and trauma. She's a level 3 certified IFS therapist and teaches somatic IFS, an approach developed by Susan McConnell. IFS is taking the world by storm, internal family systems, and for good reason. And I think somatic internal family systems is a really beautiful addition to that approach. And so we're going to be talking about that today. We're going to be talking all about what are some of the key practices of somatic IFS? What are some of the key moves that they make with people? How do they view the importance of the body in working with parts? And how does it view self-energy, this core aspect of us that's not a part that internal family systems point towards? This is a really beautiful conversation, and I hope you really enjoy it. Just one last thing. If you are a coach, a transformational coach, you can join our ever-growing community, our global community of transformational coaches by heading to coachesrising.com. Just put your name in the sign-up box there, and you'll hear about all the things we're creating that are not this podcast. You can also find our acclaimed trainings there. So let's dive in now. Here's the podcast with Marcella Cox. I don't have to tell you that these are turbulent times. They're astonishing times. Many people are feeling deeply challenged, more reactive, and my sense is in more need of coaching than ever. And while these times are full of challenges, they're also ripe with evolutionary potential. This is the gift of these times. And I think it's these moments that coaches are built for, so we can help our clients unlock the deeper capacities and intelligence that's required of them now. And that's exactly what our newest program, Unlocking Leaders, is all about. You'll learn how to work at the source code of change, beyond strategy, beyond protocol, at the level of consciousness itself. This, for me, has been by far the biggest leverage I have with my clients. It's the most potent move I can make, because the level of consciousness a leader is operating from determines everything. What they notice, what they miss, whether they react defensively, stay grounded, whether they tighten in control or open into creativity and collaborativity, and ultimately what becomes possible in how they lead. And when you work at this level, you'll be able to tap into these hidden drivers behind decisions and behaviors and unlock possibilities in situations that once felt stuck. And beyond that, importantly, you're going to cultivate a capacity that AI will never possess. As AI expands and begins to dominate procedural and operational coaching, as it grows, it's becoming clearer what it cannot do. And it can't feel, it can't connect in the same way when two human beings come together and the field that they create becomes part of the transformational conversation. It can't work with consciousness, the very source of transformation and the source of the most powerful coaching moves. This is what separates good coaches from great coaches working at this level. And AI can't touch this. So if you're interested to find out more about this program, if you feel called to join us, then head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. The first class is June 16th with Jim Dethmer, just an incredible, masterful coach. And he's joined by Bob Anderson, also a true pioneer in the field of conscious leadership and coaching. And if you sign up by May 29th, you can get the early bird discount. Enrollment is open until June 12th. So head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. So Marcella, I am really delighted to be with you because I'm a huge fan of internal family systems and of the essentialness of our embodiment and our bodies in any transformational healing process. And so we're going to hit that sweet spot today. And so, well, first of all, how are you in this moment?
I am doing okay in this moment. And I appreciate you asking in this moment, because that's really what embodiment is, right? It's a moment to moment experience. And so even checking in with your body in this moment? Like, how is your body in this moment? But before we even dive into that, I want to say it's an honor to be on your podcast, and I'm looking forward to our conversation today.
Yeah, me too. And I can feel the pull of like, I think you just teed up actually quite a profound topic there. But actually, let me begin by asking you, some people might not know what internal family systems is. And I think that that number of people on the planet is kind of shrinking rapidly because it seems to be everywhere. But could you, just for the person, we'll do this quite quickly. We'll say what is internal family systems, and then we'll talk about, well, what is embodied internal family systems, and then go into some deeper topic. So yeah, what, like, for those listening who haven't heard of that yet, which I think is few in the coaching transformational world, what is internal family systems?
So IFS therapy is a rapidly growing therapeutic model, not only in the world of therapy, but in other areas as well. And it's a way for us to relate to our parts from a place of our true authentic self. And it was developed by Richard Schwartz, I think in the 80s, and he's a family systems therapist. And I think you're going to have Dick Schwartz on your program. Is that right?
Yeah, you're actually, yeah, exactly. So when depends when this podcast goes out, but exactly, he's going to be, so that's kind of like a big reveal. You're going to be on the faculty of that program, Symphony of Self, working with IFS and other parts, modalities, and Dick Schwartz too. Yeah, Richard Schwartz too. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Yeah. So as Dick was developing the model, what he discovered, he was actually working in an eating disorder program. And what he discovered is that we have these parts of ourselves. And sometimes these parts become extreme. And often they do when there's some wounding underneath, when there's some exile energy underneath, and they become extreme. But having parts is normal. We have, you know, if you think of, you're making a decision, right? A part of you might want to do one thing and another part of you might want to do something else. So this multiplicity of mind is it's a natural state of being. It doesn't mean that we have multiple personality disorder or anything like that. We all have parts, and they're there to help us out. And as I said, sometimes they can become extreme when they're protecting some vulnerability inside, and they help us navigate the world. And so IFS, what I think is really different about the model is this idea of our self. So there are other therapeutic models that bring in this idea of parts, like Gestalt, but IFS brings in this idea of our self energy, our core essence, our authentic self, who we are, that it gets undamaged by the things that happen to us. And it's actually our self energy, our true self, that is the healing agent. When we can be with our parts and understand them, right? These protective parts, when we can really appreciate and be in relationship to them, then when they start to trust us enough, they can relax back and they show us who they're protecting. And we can then compassionately witness and be with those younger, more vulnerable parts of ourselves for some healing to happen. And once that happens, then the protective parts can take on different roles. And they don't have to work so hard to protect us in these extreme ways. And so with IFS, right, it's this amazing therapeutic model, but it's also a way to relate to the world around us. Yeah, it's a really exciting model. I've had profound healing in my own life, and just it's such an honor to be with clients and doing retreats and holding space for others for their healing. I love using it as a therapist, because we don't have to have the answers. We have the model. Parts know why they do what they're doing, Right. So we can ask the parts. And so it just is a huge relief in my system to not have to know the answers to what's happening for someone. We can ask, there's wisdom inside. Yeah. So it's a little bit about the model.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that I think I want to just say in response is like what you said about self, you know, that IFS has this kind of core essential aspect of us that, you know, isn't a part. It's actually different. And when you access that and meet parts from that place, that's a game changer. And I have found that in my own experience. And I think it's so profound, that point that, you know, what I noticed, and this is where I think the other thing I want to say is this is like amazing for coaching too. But what I found in my own life and seeing it in my clients was actually for a long time, is as if I was like, you know, in the game of parts, like one part wouldn't like another part. And so it was trying to improve myself and fix myself because it didn't like the part of me that felt a lack of value or a lack of confidence. And then another part would kind of fight back, and then they would polarize, and actually it's like healing and transformation couldn't occur because, you know, the game was being played from within inside of itself. And when I discovered IFS and actually you could access self energy, and that was what was able to bring that unconditional regard and love to these parts in a way that they never received. And that then when they feel that, and there's a whole process for that, but that's when they can relax, you know, in a sense, or you know, blossom. So it was incredible. Yeah.
Yeah, I love hearing that, Joel. And you know, the polarizations are so common, right? There can be clusters of parts that work together and alliances that parts have, and there can be polarizations, and those polarizations can become more and more entrenched, right? And there's parts that want to control, and then parts that are, you know, rebelling against the control. And so often when we get to know these different parts of ourselves from this place of compassionate curiosity, our self energy, right, they can show us how they're trying to help us out. And what they're afraid would happen if they didn't do their job. And also, oftentimes, which is so surprising, you know, when I first discovered this, is they're protecting the same vulnerability, right? That they just have different strategies of doing it. And often they don't know about each other as well.
So maybe just to stay on this thread before we talk about embodied and somatic IFS, because I found with my coaching clients that knowing about parts is just a game changer, because it's like a kind of, once you start to see that, you know that parts exist, and we kind of know this anyway implicitly, like you said, in our language, like a part of me thinks this, but once you start to see that in your clients' challenges, then it unlocks so much, because then you start to see how parts are showing up around, you know, leadership challenges, around leading teams, leading an organization. Often parts are getting triggered in those situations, which can be quite intense, you know, in this intense world we're in. And so if you're, you know, if you're leading from a part, it can have a kind of certain strategy, and you know, it has this good intention, but you know, maybe a more limited way of seeing than when you're leading from, you know, this essential self kind of energy. And so maybe the question in that is like, could you just like, so you kind of alluded to this, but how is IFS inviting people to meet parts? You know, what is that kind of core process? And then this could be a segue into embodied IFS, but what is, you know, you mentioned there's protector parts and there's self energy and there's exiles. What's that process there?
Yeah, well, I, you know, just to reiterate what you were saying, you know, sometimes our parts are leading, and when they are, it's the lens through which we see things. And when the part is leading, there aren't necessarily other options, because it has its own agenda. It has this way of seeing the world and how things operate, and it has an agenda. And you were asking about, like, well, how do we shift that? How do we become in relationship to that? And there's a technique within IFS called unblending, where we start to ask the part some of these questions about how is it trying to help us, and there's these six F's, right? We find the part, we focus on it, we flesh it out, we start to befriend it, and we ask it its fears, like what is it afraid would happen if it didn't do this job, and then the question that we really want to get to is, how do you feel towards this part of yourself? And when you learn the model, right, you learn that there are these different qualities of self energy, and you know, we're not in self or not in self. It's like a continuum, right? Sometimes we have more of our self energy, we have access to more of our self energy, and there are qualities, there are 8C qualities of self-energy. And if, when we ask that question, how do you feel towards this part of yourself? If there's anything other than like some open-hearted curiosity, right? There's compassion and curiosity and clarity and creativity and courage and connectedness. And there's a few others that aren't on the top of my mind right now, but there are these 8 qualities, and if it's anything other than that, you know that you don't have a critical mass of self energy to be in relationship to it. Because what we might hear is, oh, I hate that part of myself. Well, we then know that's another part. And if we can't ask that one, like, oh, does that make sense that a part of you would not like this one? And if it does make sense, and the part is able to, the one that doesn't like it is able to step back, and then you're able to ask that question again, and establish that there is some self-energy to relate to it, right? So it's an unblending technique. So then more of you, your core self-energy, can be in relationship to that part to understand it better, right? So I always say, IFS is actually a relationship building model. And self-energy is how we build relationship. We build relationship inside with our parts, and we build, we probably have met people who have a lot of self-energy, and how you feel around those people, right? We can build relationships with others through our self-energy. And those relationships, like when they're with our true authentic selves, like we really feel seen with another, we feel understood with another, as opposed to when someone's relating to you from a part, well, they don't really know me, right? They don't really get who I am, right? So we can see this in relationally, and you know, we connect to beyond, right? Our the natural world, right? We connect in other ways, our pets and the world around us. With our self energy. So self energy is highly relational.
Yeah, that's why I think this is so important for coaching too, that, you know, a lot of the time, I think people in the world are getting kind of caught in parts, and understandably so, you know, not to make that wrong. But then, yeah, there's a limitation perhaps in that. And so, you know, what strikes me, and what I've not seen in working with parts work, is that, these protector parts and even exiles, it's only when they feel that unconditional regard that they will kind of relate in that, you know, in a fuller way, you know. Otherwise they'll just feel there's a change agenda, you know, there's kind of some making wrong of them. And often then they just kind of, they're not going to show up really. And move into that kind of transformational relationality that you're talking about. And maybe this is a good, yeah. Do you want to, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I have maybe something that might illustrate that. I was recently leading a retreat with 32 participants, and one of them was sharing, like, oh, I have this part of me that just gets hopeless about change. And what the shift that happened for her was not trying to change the hopeless one, but to be with it, to understand it, to understand how many times there was an attempt to change and it didn't change, and to meet it with some compassion and understanding and loving it up. And it just continued to reveal more and more about this hopelessness. And it, you know, it went back a long way in some earlier experience that it had, but there was a tremendous shift that happened just by not trying to change, but to be with, you know, relating to that part. So it was a beautiful transformation that happened with the part that felt hopeless.
I think this is the paradox as well, in the sense of, you know, again, in coaching, often there's this like wanting to kind of become more of something, and that can create this inner conflict with the parts of us that are actually, you know, protecting us or holding us back from, you know, life in some way. And that's the game changer I've found, is actually, instead of trying to layer over the top certain qualities, actually when you begin to meet your experience in that way, yeah, like there's a part of me that's despairing, will I ever change, you know? Mm-hmm. And then just like, oh, what if we just include that? And you know, and then actually that's when that can open, something then can open up, you know, in a way that wasn't possible before. So, I think that move is actually perhaps a move we're being invited into more generally in the world, because it's not so common to how we treat ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You mentioned, you know, we can have the parts, and, you know, I imagine many people who are listening are coaches, and, you know, people come to a coach because they want some change, right? They want something to be different in some way. And so as a coach and me as a therapist, right, we have these parts of ourselves that want to help, that have these ideas of how things could be different. And really that, you know, there can be a polarization around that, right? That, okay, embracing IFS versus, oh, coaching as I was taught coaching, and, you know, wanting to help someone change. And that has an agenda, right? And getting to know those parts of ourselves. And you mentioned this program that you're going to be doing, and Symphony of Self, and I'll be a part of that. And we're going to be working with some of those coaching parts in the program to understand our own systems, because IFS is, you know, as I found it, is really an inside out model. You know, you and I can speak about IFS, and it's kind of, you know, cognitively we can get it and get really excited about it. But it's when we start to actually practice the model that we really get it. And I was recently on a trip with my 86-year-old father. I took him on this trip, and we had this guide, and she said this thing, and I was like, oh my God, this just applies so beautifully to IFS. And it might even be a coaching quote. It's like, have me read something tell me something and I may or may not remember it. Have me read something and I may or may not understand it, but have me experience something and then I know it. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, what happens with IFS. Have me experience relating to my parts from self-energy, and then I get to know them. I get to know this model as well. So that's why we'll be doing a lot of experiential exercises in this program that I'll be, the couple sessions I'll be offering through Symphony of Self.
Could you say, how do you How have you recognized in yourself when there are parts there that actually have an agenda for the client? Because, I think this is a very common dynamic that we have to work with as space holders. And, there's all kinds of projections we can bring in, and it may be in the beginning more kind of obvious desire to help, which can get in the way, but it can be very subtle, like how there's an actual imposition we have on our clients to have them want to change, and so how do you recognize that in yourself or in the people you train, help them see when they're not in this self energy?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And there's a couple ways I'll answer it. The first is for myself, and I notice for myself, if I know what my own self energy feels like, and I'm wondering if we should pause right now because
Oh,
can you hear my
it's cool. Your dog is welcome in our podcast. And if he or
Okay.
she gets too loud, I'll say, but yeah,
Okay.
life is here with us. Yes. Yeah, so, yeah.
I'm glad to hear that. Getting back to your question, though, and thanks for inviting my dog in. Self energy is an embodied quality, right? We feel self energy in our body. So, and as I said, it's kind of on a spectrum, right? Sometimes I might have more of it, sometimes I might have less of it. So if I'm feeling that connectedness with the earth and in my chair and that calmness, that's another quality of self-energy, like that calmness. And for me, it's like this open-hearted curiosity. I feel more of my aliveness. I'm more embodied. So I have a sense of when I'm more in my self energy, right? I have more access to it. And what I might notice if a part is taking over is I'm leaning forward, right? I've lost my back. I've lost connection to my back body. And I know we're on Zoom so much these days, right? And so sometimes I forget I have a back body, but just even sitting back in my chair, I'm like, oh, there I am. There I am. So it's like being aware of how I'm listening. Right. Yeah, so much of this healing work we're doing is like a right brain to right brain experience, and it's an embodied experience. And I know it's hard to see people's bodies on Zoom, but you mentioned, I practice somatic IFS, right? And somatic IFS, we're bringing in more of the body. And the developer of somatic IFS, her name is Susan McConnell. And what she says is, like the verbal story is 20% of the story. The body is holding the other 80% of the body, right? So we might notice, someone fidgeting online or like that whatever we're talking about is making them, there's something there. Or we might notice some gesture, some movement, and I kind of have a little, when do I bring that in? Well, if I'm noticing it two or three times, then I might invite in some curiosity around it, and bringing in the body into the process. Into IFS more and more. So getting back to your question, that's how, for me, that's how I'm more kinesthetic. So I notice my self energy in a more embodied way, and really feeling in those qualities, feeling even some qualities like clarity, right? There's a clearness in my head of cl what clarity feels like. Creativity, right? It's like kind of in my abdomen, right? That like there's these ideas, right? It doesn't have to only come from here, but it's like there's this flow that happens with creativity in me. So there are these embodied qualities. And when I work with other therapists or coaches, thinking about clients, right? We bring in some curiosity around parts of the therapist or the coach that might be coming up when working with this client. And that happens for all of us, right? This is not something that we have to exile, but it's important for us to get to know and for us to be with our parts so we can ask them to unblend and trust us that we can be with our clients. And sometimes my parts will give me a little information, right? And that's fine. You know, I can bring some curiosity, right? I have curiosity about this. Is that right? So I don't have to exile my parts, but they trust me to lead.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's why the body's so important for me, because it's just such a great signal of when I'm, you know, there's a kind of contraction in the body in some way, you know, all these ways you describe, and it just reveals to me that there's some kind of tensing around like what's unfolding, and that awareness can be an invitation to kind of welcome that and then, you know, kind of unblend and step back into self energy. And so if I just ask you now about somatic IFS, like in a way we've been talking about that more and more, what's different about somatic IFS, or, you know, how would you describe it? And of course there's these five core domains and areas of kind of practice as well.
Yeah. IFS does bring in the body into the model, right? We find a part. How do you feel towards it? So there are. It does bring in the body, and Susan McConnell, and there was a couple other trainers, Susan McConnell and Kate Gardner in particular, were trained in Hakomi, and they were early in, as the model was being developed, they brought in more and more of the body into the model. And what makes, I mean, somatic IFS is you're still doing IFS, but it brings in these somatic practices of somatic awareness, right? Like I feel the connection with my chair right now. Like I will just invite everyone, like how aware are you of your body right now? Just taking some moments. How embodied are you as you're listening to the podcast? If you're sitting, what are you noticing? Right? Are you noticing points of contact of your body? Are you noticing some tension in your body? Are you noticing, if you're walking, right? Your feet moving, the flow of energy. And so we're bringing in the somatic awareness. If there is tension, if there's anything other than self energy, right, that's a part, and parts aren't problems, but we can then, okay, we get to know, oh, parts are embodied somatically, right? And we can be aware, right? As you were saying, that tension or a constriction or feeling a collapse or some uneasiness, then we can start to get to know and be curious about those parts. So somatic awareness is one. And the next one is conscious breathing. And our breath, often when we're breathing, our self energy has often a different way of breathing than our parts, right? We can find parts in our, when we're breathing, right? If we really are following the breath, like I would invite listeners right now to just notice their breathing, not trying to change it, but notice it. And sometimes we can feel like, oh, there's some stickiness in my breath or something that's happening in my breathing. It might be because actually you have, you know, cold or something like that. But sometimes there can be a part there. There can be a part, and our parts, right? if we're very fearful or if we're angry, like those parts, they breathe differently, right? And so we can even get to know a part. You know, we can start to create a relationship with a part using our breath, like sending that part a breath of your self energy to welcome it here, right? If there's some anger or some fear, like, oh, it's okay, you're welcome here. The third practice is radical resonance. And this practice is what I think sets somatic IFS apart from different somatic therapies. And radical resonance is really the way we relate to our parts. Like when I think of Dan Siegel's model of feeling safe and secure, right? And we need that presence. We need attunement. We need that resonance, and then the trust is built, and then we feel safe, right? Like the resonance is, do you really get me? And so relationally, we're doing this with clients, right? Is this right? And sometimes we get it wrong, right? Oh no, it's not that, but it's this. And that's not a problem either, because it's helping the client deepen into what their experience is. But resonance is just really that right brain to right brain connection that we have.
When you say right brain to right brain, what do you mean by that? Yeah.
When we think of our left brain, right, it's more about like exchanging information. But you and I sitting here, right, there's a connection that's happening that's not about the words.
Right.
Right. How open is my heart as I'm sitting here with you? As I'm in your presence? It's not a logical thinking process that's going on. It's a embodied relational process that's happening.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe we can talk about the other. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, there are two more practices. The next one is mindful movement. And mindful movement, it's such an amazing practice for witnessing parts, right? Parts often can want to express themselves through movement. And then the last one is, and we can also access more self energy with movement, right? Just even lengthening through our neck and feeling our vertical line of energy flowing through us, like a little movement broadening through the collarbones can allow us a little more access to our self energy. And then lastly is attuned touch. And I just think of like, we're born into hands as humans, and touch can be either imagined touch, like we can imagine touching our parts when we go inside, you know, if they're open to it. It can be, we can be touched by elements or words, right? If we go outside and feel the warm sun on our skin or the cool breeze flowing past our bodies, or touched by kind words. And it can be real touch, right? It can be the touch, our own self-touch, right? Our parts, like, you know, maybe you have a hand on your chest and there's a part there, and can that part really feel you feeling it? You know, what's that like for that part? Or it could be, you know, a therapist or a coach might use touch, and that, you know, we really want to make sure we're trained with touch and have consent of our clients to use touch. So that one gets, you know, we have to follow ethical guidelines there.
Mm.
Yeah.
So what's inspiring to me is that as you describe all of these, it sounds like they're all kind of doorways into how we can, you know, kind of be in this alchemical process with parts, and that, and it's a question for you, really, and we can kind of pick out some of these domains and go a bit deeper into them. But Like, you said right brain to right brain. So it's like there can be a kind of transformational process taking place, which is kind of deeply embodied and in these domains, as opposed to, just in our minds or visualizing or speaking about the parts. But there's a kind of, like a kind of embodied energetic, alchemical process taking place. So it sounds like as you build like somatic proficiency with IFS, it's just expanding the realm of possibility for the deepening of this transformational process.
Absolutely. As I was saying, we are, like the foundation of IFS is there, and we bring in these tools. And sometimes, because they are more, they're embodied. Sometimes they're not verbal. Sometimes there's not necessarily a memory or a story that goes along with it, but it's some energy that's in the body. And we don't really know if it's, we can guess. Maybe it's the protector, maybe it's some exile energy. We don't really know, but we can be with it. And what often blows me away, Joel, is sometimes when we're with it and we just bring that presence and that curiosity and that attunement to it, things start to shift and move. And when there's enough self-energy to hold that, whatever that experience is, that embodied experience is, things might shift. Like I've had experiences where there's some tension in my body and I just bring some curiosity to it and just, is there something more you want me to know about this? And it's okay for you to be here. And I just allow it to be, and then it goes. Interesting. It gave me a little bit of information, and then it goes. Yeah. So it's quite fascinating, right? That bringing in the more of the body, right? Sometimes it doesn't have necessarily a story. Could be pre-verbal even. We think about implicit memory, right? And that our bodies still remember all those things that happened to us before we had words, before we, developed that capacity for memory, conscious memory.
Yeah, wow, there's so much in what you're saying here. Like one thing that's standing out is it's kind of giving you and I don't want to kind of compare too much because it's like, but there's a sense of here where you're kind of fine-tuning to the almost like the uniqueness of each embodied moment when it comes to parts, and so it's incredibly useful to kind of know that there are protector parts and exile parts, and that's because that's just such a powerful distinction. It's incredibly powerful, and that, yeah, also we can kind of meet our embodied experience on this kind of radically unique level where, there might not even be a kind of interpretation in our minds or something like that. That just seems very, very powerful.
And I think I said earlier in our conversation, right? Like, I don't have to know, and I can ask the part. But if the part isn't a verbal part, then we, as you said, we are being with what is unfolding, moment to moment, with that open-hearted, compassionate curiosity of what it's like for. What's unfolding, what it's like in that moment for our client.
Could it's interesting to me with pre-verbal parts, and how might you know like a pre-verbal part is showing up?
Yeah, well, sometimes I haven't met many pre-verbal protectors. Normally, pre-verbal parts that I've met are more exile energy, and they often don't have words. They just, the client might say it feels very young, and in my own system, like sometimes something will come in and it's just like this body memory of something. It's like, oh, it does. I know this from being very young, being a baby. This happened. And it's in my body. It's not like a memory of, this person did that or whatever it was, right? It's some pre-verbal part, something is held in my body, or for a client, right? It's like, oh no, this is a baby. It's really young.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's helpful. And then I guess in that moment, the invitation again is just to kind of attune to that note, you know, include it, and check if the client is in that self energy that, in a way that supports that, the gestalt of that kind of embodied, pre-verbal, energy to be met.
That's right. That's right. Compassionately witnessing and being with that young one in a way that they needed someone to be with them, back when they were a baby.
Could we explore a couple of these domains? I find it fascinating that we could use breath to contact a part as well. I think you said that you know, there's a possibility of using the breath to actually to meet a part. And are you saying in that in a sense we could bring like self energy to the part through breath, or is it more like we could get to know the part through the breath? Yeah, maybe both.
Or... Yeah. Parts have self energy too, right? That's how we connect with them. So say, say there's some anger, right? And we're, or I'll give an example of recently I was working with someone and they were really frustrated at a work situation, right? So this frustration was there and she's feeling it in her body. And as a way to invite it and let it know it's okay to be here, like, how would it be to send that part a breath of your awareness, like that you're feeling it and really sending it a breath? And so that invited the part, like, oh, I'm not alone. I'm being felt by someone else. I'm feeling felt by the self energy, right? The person, and I'm welcome here. And so often, right, there's another part that doesn't want me to be frustrated at this work situation, thinks I should just get over it and that's just life, and right, or minimizes it or whatever it is. But then know that this is for this part, it's really frustrating and it's okay for it to be here and to be known. Mm-hmm. And so using the breath as a way to say, welcome.
And what happened for your client in that moment? Was it, yeah, that it created some kind of shift or opening?
It did create some shift. It, what happened for this particular client is she sent it some breath, and the frustration first initially got a little bit bigger. It got to some anger, right? And then it went to a collapse, right? So there was these other parts that came in, and then a collapse, and the collapse, there was both of those, the anger and the collapse, there were two little exiles there. The collapse one was crying in her bed because she wasn't seen. And the angry one was like, I'm the only one that can take care of this little one and no one gets it, right? And that was underneath the frustration. So just by being with the frustration, it kind of led to this deeper healing work for her to attend to both of these little ones, that the anger then, oh no, there's someone else here. It's not all on me. And like really appreciating this young angry one that who felt all alone and had to protect this young one who wasn't seen. So that's what happened with my client's work
And do you find that working in a somatic way enhances the kind of, I think we spoke about this earlier, I can't remember in the check-in or on the conversation itself, there's a kind of like organic healing process or integration process that can take place where in a sense, like it starts to do itself, like, and we're, opening to that innate process.
And I think we were talking about this before we started recording. Let me see. How do I want to answer this question? I mean, self-energy, being the healing agent, like often we know how to relate to our parts. We know what to do. And sometimes, as a therapist, or if you're a coach, like getting out of the way when there's critical mass of self energy with a client, they are working with their parts, and we kind of get out of the way. And when I think I was sharing with you before we started recording, not only is our self energy embodied, but so are our parts. They show up in our body, and they are protecting us. And when there has been some wounding, right, and vulnerability, that's also in our body. And so those exiles, they want their story to be known. They want their story, they want to be healed, right? And they sometimes get active. Things can activate them. So these protectors, get to work and trying to keep them at bay. Right, and all this is happening in our body, and what I find somatic IFS, when we're working with clients and being with their process, their how parts are showing up in their body, like sometimes just the healing starts to happen, and the reason I think is that radical resonance piece. We have a critical amount of self energy. We're available as witnessing and resonating with our client's experience, holding space, being with what is happening, what is unfolding. Yes, we're holding the model, and we're making sure that our clients have self energy as well. And there's ways to work with clients if they don't have access to self energy, right? We have this way of working with clients called direct access. But it's pretty incredible. I know you've had some experiences yourself working with IFS.
Yeah, and it's great you bring this up because I wanted to invite you to share more about radical resonance, and let me bring in like my question or my kind of reflection, and then which is this conversation about, I think we have maybe haven't named this explicitly, maybe we did, but that often these protector parts are protecting us from feeling the exile, they're protecting us from feeling that exiled part and the experiences it had. So they've got these protective strategies. And so and so you're talking about how there's the kind of IFS process, but then there's reality itself and how it can actually, the innate healing system process kicks in. And so what I want to weave into that is then, therapy and coaching, this is an inevitable kind of question that comes up where, when we in our trainings point to this deeper territory, and then coaches will say, but isn't this therapy now? And, of course, like it's really important that coaches don't go into territories where they don't feel empowered. If they just blindly kind of blunder their way in there and open up things they're not able to hold, that can be, that can do harm to the client. And I would say also, coaches are not often like going back to the past, to kind of, although I don't think that's what IFS is doing actually, is it's just working with an issue and then you work with the parts. But my point is that equally, like what will happen is, these exile parts will show up in a coaching session. And I believe there is a place for that. There is a place for coaches to be able to work with exile parts and not highly traumatized exile parts, unless the coach is trained to deal with that. But that actually organically will open up, like you're saying, and that then as a coach, you don't want to just close that down, and also that unburdening, which is something we haven't talked about in IFS, but that can actually just organically start taking place, when an exile part shows up and feels it's okay to be there and is met, and then it just starts to unburden. It's not like you have to do that. So anyway, I'm sharing a lot there, and I'm not quite sure my question got lost in there, but you just, and yeah, radical resonance. Just feel free to wax lyrical on what I said.
Well, I mean, I appreciate you bringing in, like, it's important for us to practice, within our scope of practice, right? Our scope of competence. And I guess a therapist, I have my own IFS therapy. I also have someone I do a consultation with. So I'm, constantly checking, right? Like, because I'm always continuing to learn and grow within the model and continuing to do my own healing. And so, as a coach, you want to make sure that you're practicing in a way that is aligned with your training, and you're feeling that you're getting continued support around working with clients. I think that's, I mean, it's an ethical obligation for therapists to do that. I don't know for coaches if you have that same
I
kind
think
of.
it's an ethical, at the very least, given. Yeah, I mean, I think more coaches should follow the lead of therapy and have supervision as a mandatory. But yeah, anyway, yeah, I disrupted you. Yeah.
And when you bring in the body, right, we don't know what's held in someone's body, because those protectors, as you mentioned, like, they want to keep that exile energy at bay. And I can imagine, if you are working as a coach, you're probably not working with someone who's really struggling with their mental health. And so that is not within your scope. But when you bring in the body, we don't, as I said, we don't know. And there can be transformation that happens when we are open to being with what is held. And I also think of, like, people who are doing yoga, and like that energy might be, or some other somatic practices, qigong, like that energy is moving through you in some way, right? And we don't have to necessarily know the story, the backstory of what happened. And sometimes with the body, we don't have that conscious memory, right? There's just a body memory of it. So yeah, if you are doing somatic IFS, or there are other somatic therapies, like somatic experiencing, which I think also trains coaches and stuff, that you are working with whatever is there in the body, and being trained to be with it. And with somatic experiencing and those types of therapies, you often will bring in resource of, that might be grounding resources, or it might be, going to the counter vortex, right? There's the trauma vortex and the counter vortex. But with IFS, we have self-energy, right? Self-energy is grounding, right? That sense of calm and connectedness. And so self-energy is the ultimate resource. Yeah, so to answer your question, I mean, we want to work within our scope, but being trained in whatever modality you're using and practicing within your scope, I would say. And then you had a question about radical resonance. Can you?
Yeah, I mean, in a sense, that's I'm curious about radical resonance and how it can support the process. And I imagine there's like, well, maybe you could say what it is again, and then it sounds like the practitioner, the therapist, or the coach can embody radical resonance, but they can invite their clients in to feel that too. So what? How does that support the process? Yeah.
Yeah, I would say resonance is really about, and I'm not a musician or so I but we can resonate with another, like emotions have frequency. The earth has a frequency. And in our body we measure frequency. We have the echocardiograms, and like our heart has a frequency, and brain waves have frequency, right? So this isn't unusual to understand bringing in frequency in the body. As clinicians, we open ourselves up to being with our clients. And sometimes we might feel things in our bodies as our clients are sharing with us, right? And that can be a form of resonating, like, oh, I'm feeling this. Is that what you're feeling? Right? I'm resonating with what you're sharing with me, that I'm feeling it too. And that can be really powerful for a client to really feel that you're getting them and that you're understanding what it's really like for them. So we're opening ourselves up to be impacted by another. And as therapists, it's important that we're working on our own, with our own parts, so we can have enough self energy to allow that to happen. Yeah.
Yeah, I found this is such an important practice for me to refine our perceptual faculties, to as parts integrate and more self energy comes, and then there's a kind of attunement to the different frequencies of life, and it's almost like a restoration of being able to feel life and then be able to perceive our clients. And that, isn't telling them how they are and everything. I might, sometimes I might sense something, and it's just an offer of like, oh, I'm just feeling something here, and how's that for you? And maybe that's not right for them, but it then helps them attuned to what is exactly there. But sometimes it's something they're not even in their that's not even in their own conscious awareness. And so I find this beautiful that you talk about this in relationship to IFS too, that we can actually that we can use that faculty to support our clients in attuning to their parts, really.
Yeah. Oh, I'm just touched. What you shared was so beautiful. Yeah, about this attunement, and really, we're opening ourselves up to another, and with our self energy, and allowing our bodies to be impacted, and then sharing that with a client. And yeah, I just everything you said was just so beautiful, to help our clients deepen and make sense of their own experience. And I love this idea, like you're really what we're helping our clients do is restore the flow of life, right? And the body, and it's all about being embodied in so many ways.
I so inspired you bring that in, because I was just sat with this kind of sense of, we talk about therapy, we talk about coaching, And we're talking about internal family systems, and it's an incredible gift, this clarity that internal family systems has brought. But really, what you just said is like that touches me in the deepest, in my deepest heart, because this is about life, and this is about these radical times we live in where there is a great level of uncertainty. And so more clients are coming in feeling disturbed, and I feel that there's an opportunity, there's a kind of like ethical, I'm careful not to get too certain with any statements I say, but certainly in my own life, I feel like as a coach, I want to meet the wholeness of the fullness of my client. And again, not go into territories where I'm not trained in, but to support them to flourish in these times. And that means that working with our embodiment. And I feel like we're all journeying in that direction. Anyway, we've kind of like coming from this time where we've, inhabited our thinking, rational minds, and it's the intelligence of our embodiment and our intuition and our capacity to respond creatively to the moment that comes from embodiment that's being called for right now. So like that's why I'm just a hell yes to this journey that we can all make. So.
Yeah. Oh, so you said it so beautifully, right? That we're these vulnerable creatures. We all are vulnerable, right? And when we can be more embodied, like slow down, and what needs to be said, how do I need to protect myself? What is Where am I safe? Where am I not safe in the world? How can I, create community for myself? Who understands me? Who are my people? Who has my back? How can I show up in the world as my true self? Right? That's I think what we're all longing for, and it's through the body that we get this other information. That's not from our logic mind. I always loved Brené Brown, and she said, as our brain developed, right, our limbic system developed before our prefrontal cortex. So we're really feeling beings that think, not thinking beings that feel. And coming back to that, right, that we're really feeling beings, and so much is happening in our bodies, and we've got divorced from them in some ways, right? We're not embodied. We walk around right in our heads so much of the time. That's what our culture promotes. But yeah, we can come back to our sweet homes. There's a richness of life there.
Yeah, I think this is like a beautiful place to begin to bring this to a close. And actually, I'd love if you could say a little bit about what you'll be teaching in Symphony of Self. I know you're going to teach about these kind of five core domains of awareness, breath, resonance, movement, and touch, and how they relate to working with parts. Could you say a little, just in a kind of a few headlines, like what you'll be teaching?
I will be teaching about somatic IFS and the five practices, but so much of what we'll be doing is experientials, and so you get to experience somatic IFS, and I think that's the best way to learn it. I assist Susan McConnell a lot, and I'm now one of her assistant trainers, and at her retreats, everyone wants to, they think it should be a training, and we want to learn somatic IFS. But what people find is when they start practicing it, it does change the way that you practice. And so that is my hope that, yes, we will have some teaching for those cognitive parts of ourselves, because we don't want to excel those. But so much of what we'll be doing is will be experiential. And I look forward to hopefully meeting some of your listeners, in a few months.
Yeah, that's inspiring to me. 'Cause it, yeah, it's like the understanding and the awareness comes in through the embodied experience, And that's what opens up more seeing, more feeling, you know, rather than, you know, cognitively getting a model, you know, which can be useful. But yeah, just makes me excited to attend your sessions. So yeah, Marcella, I just want to thank you for being on the podcast. Yeah.
Well, it's been a pleasure. I've really enjoyed our conversation, Joel. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for tuning into the podcast. I really hope you enjoyed it. And a reminder that the early bird enrollment is now open for our upcoming live training with Jim Dethmer and Bob Anderson. It's called Unlocking Leaders, and it's going to teach you how to coach at the level of consciousness, which is, for me, the highest leverage move you can make as a coach. Your client's consciousness is the place where the deepest, truest transformational breakthroughs come from. And often traditional coaching misses this. And it's something that our clients need us to learn as coaches, because our times are calling for something deeper. We've got to go beneath the content of our experience, beneath strategy, to the source of change. And that's exactly what Unlocking Leaders is designed to teach you. I'm so proud of this program, of what it's become. I feel it's our offering in these times. And if you're ready to answer the call of these times, then you can join the full program. So just head to coachesrising.com/leaders to book your spot. And remember, you can get the early bird discount if you join by 29th of May. Here we are. We're at the end of the podcast. Just a heads up again, if you're not on our mailing list and you want to stay in the loop about other things we create, then head to coachesrising.com, put your name in the sign up box there. You'll also find some of our other offerings, our online trainings for coaches there. And just want to end by wishing you well, and I'll see you again next time.